This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us for a special pre-recorded program while VOA headquarters resolves some technical issues. I'm your host, Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on this pre-recorded presentation, South African churches cancel Eastern celebrations as the number of infected jumps over 100, while Nigeria has seen only 3 confirmed coronavirus cases so far. And Malawi has been thrown into political turmoil because the country's president has rejected an electoral reform bill that would pave the way for new elections. So stay with us. We'll have these stories and more ahead on today's pre-recorded special presentation on The Voice of America. South African churches have announced cancellation of Easter celebrations as the number of the coronavirus-infected people has jumped from 62 to over 100. However, many of these churches still have no clue how they will reduce their worship services to smaller numbers in compliance with government regulations prohibiting gathering of more than 100 people. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
As the weekend approaches, religious groups in South Africa, especially Christian churches, have a big headache on how they will hold their services. On Sunday, the government announced regulations prohibiting gatherings of more than 100 people in a bid to curb the spread of the coronavirus. The popular Zion Christian Church, ZCC, with millions of followers across Africa and beyond, has had to cancel its annual Easter gathering. Alet Mazwi, who spoke in his capacity as a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, says one of his favorite camps has been cancelled.
Coronavirus disrupted us greatly. We had planned the camp over the Easters, groceries, the camp food. We just do not know what to do. However, when all is said and done, let us look up, for our redemption draweth nigh.
Reverend Frank Mhlanga, senior pastor at the Humber Vangeli Christian Ministries, says it's time for churches to be innovative.
If a church has more than 100 people, you can break that into 2 or 3 or 4 services a day. For those other big churches who can afford, perhaps they can do live preaching on their TV channels, networks, and advise their members to watch from home ministers live on their TV channels.
Another believer, Justin Kwena, says it seems his congregation was ready for the coronavirus.
It will be difficult for some people, I should think, but in my church, not really, because already there were provisions for people who were unable to come to church. The services are streamed online, Facebook. I guess for the first week or second week, I should be fine. But I know third, fourth, it will be difficult to not meet with the brethren.
President Cyril Ramaphosa admits his announced measures will be an inconvenience, but says social distancing is key to putting a stop to the spread of the coronavirus.
I would like all of us as South Africans to realize that we are going through a period which we've never gone through before since our own democracy. This is going to be a testing period for all of us.
Experts say the coronavirus has left the church at a crossroads, considering some of its customs like celebrating mass, handshakes, and sitting close to each other, which should now be stopped to limit the coronavirus' ability to spread from person to person. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The International Organization for Migration, IOM, and the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, are taking steps to temporarily suspend the resettlement departures for refugees. The measure will be in place as long as it remains essential. The concern is that international travel could increase the exposure of refugees to the coronavirus. The mere fact that countries are placing a hold on resettlement arrivals, given the public health situation, according to a UNHCR, directly affects refugee families, with some experiencing extensive delays, while others have been stranded or separated from family members. Resettlement provides a vital lifeline to particularly vulnerable refugees. IOM and UNHCR say they will continue their work in refugee hosting countries in connection with relevant partners to ensure that the processing of cases for resettlement continues. Zimbabwe's government has declared the COVID-19 virus a national disaster to release funds to fight its spread. At the same time, the main opposition group, the Movement for Democratic Change, led by Nelson Chamisa, has launched an initiative to help combat coronavirus at a time when many are skeptical of the government's preparedness to handle any likely outbreak. Reporter Kudzani Musengi gives us more.
The government Tuesday banned large public gatherings, including church services and weddings, and took other measures such as postponing independence celebrations, which were set for April 18th in Bulawayo. The government also postponed the Zimbabwe International Trade Fair, scheduled for late April. Citizens are encouraged to avoid traveling to high-risk countries for a month, and small border crossings have been closed. While schools remain open, they may be shut later on to slow the spread of the virus. The day before the government's announcement, the opposition Movement for Democratic Change announced its own initiative, dubbed ZimLock, for Zimbabwe Lockout Corona to fight the virus. It entails, among other things, establishing a command center with hotlines to respond to distress calls. The MDC also plans to appoint leaders in various localities to deal with the pandemic. The MDC, which controls most of urban councils, also wants parliament to appropriate funds for preparedness, including funding fixed and mobile testing stations. According to the government, as of Tuesday, Zimbabwe had no confirmed COVID-19 cases. The opposition's initiative has received praise as it has come at a time when many Zimbabweans feel that the government has not been transparent and doubt its capacity to deal with the pandemic. But some have also seen it as an opposition ploy to gain political mileage. Joseph Chuma, a member of the ruling ZANU-PF Party Central Committee and a former member of parliament, says it would be unfortunate if the opposition were to attempt to seek political advantage from the disease.
The COVID-19 pandemic is a worldwide threat, and therefore we should not look at it from a political spectacle. This must never be a question of whether the opposition or the ruling party or whatever group, in terms of contributing to the combating of this pandemic. This is everybody's responsibility. We all need to have our hands on the deck.
On the MDC website, party leader Nelson Chamisa says the pandemic is a global threat and there should be no politicking over it.
This is no longer about politics. This is about life. This is about health. This is about our being, our collective being. This virus is also class blind. It doesn't know those who are rich, those who are poor, those in the urban areas, those in the rural areas. It affects everyone.
Zimbabwe's economy has been slowly collapsing for more than a year, and it lacks the ability to import many crucial goods, including drugs and medical supplies. In addition, doctors and nurses have conducted prolonged stay-away job actions over the past year, saying that inflation has eroded their pay so badly they can't afford to go to work. Chamisa noted the weakness of the healthcare system in his statement.
We need to begin to have a disaster preparedness mode. We have a very fragile health system, and under circumstances of fragility, we need to go out of our way, step out of our laurels and do something, spring into action, make sure that we appeal to our health professionals to all be ready mentally, psychologically, but also materially by, as government, doing something about it to make sure that they are in a situation where they are not vulnerable.
Zimbabwe's neighbor and biggest trading partner, South Africa, has recorded several dozen COVID-19 cases, raising concerns the virus could easily spread to Zimbabwe. Pretoria this week announced a raft of measures, including the closure of many of its border crossings and restricting large gatherings to slow the spread. South Africa provides many of the goods Zimbabwe needs. Supply chain expert Edwin Mushanyuri says if South Africa were to go into complete lockdown, Zimbabwe would suffer.
As you are aware, we import maize, wheat, which are basic goods that are required in our economy. And if South Africa were to go ahead and lock down, we will experience serious challenges of availability of basic goods to the Zimbabwean populace.
South Africa closed two-thirds of its land border posts in an effort to slow the spread of the virus. Its airports and some of its seaports remain open. Reporting from Bulawayo, I am Kudzanai Msengi.
Nigeria has seen only 3 confirmed coronavirus cases so far, but people are already being told to adjust their behavior to keep the virus from spreading. Churches, banks, and other institutions are in the forefront of making changes, as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
At many churches in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, worshippers are now screened and given hand gloves, sanitizers, and face masks before attending services. Church authorities or leaders say these measures became necessary after Nigeria's health ministry confirmed the country's first case of coronavirus on February 28. Jide Ogunshakin is the founder of the New Kingdom Church, a Pentecostal church in Abuja.
The purpose of that church is to enlighten. It's to enlighten people and help people to fulfill destiny. And that includes helping people not to be vulnerable to some epidemic. So, and that's why it's important that churches should educate people on the issue of the coronavirus.
Ogunshakin says they are eliminating practices that may pose risks, such as sharing communion cups or laying of hands during prayers.
Ritual things are not carnal things. If the Lord expressly say lay hands on someone, why not? But if the Lord did not say so, in fact, the Bible says lay hand suddenly on no one. That's what the Bible says.
Other institutions where people gather, like banks, schools, and hotels, are also adopting these precautionary practices. The manager of the First City Monument Bank, FCMB, in Abuja, Folake Joseph, says they are checking the temperature of every customer who comes in and ensuring that all of them use hand sanitizer.
We have all this communication even before the virus came to Nigeria, before it was confirmed in Nigeria. They've been sending a lot of awareness stuff to us on how to prevent it, because every day we have all kinds of people coming into the bank.
Across Africa, the rate of the spread of the coronavirus remains relatively low, although cases have been recorded in at least 30 countries, including Nigeria. Nigeria has yet to record any deaths from the virus. Authorities are hoping that will remain the case, especially if Nigerians carry out preventive measures. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
You're listening to a special recorded program on VOA Africa. I'm your host, Yeheyes Wuhib. Here is a recap of our top stories for today's special pre-recorded presentation. South African churches cancel Easter celebrations as the number of infected in the country jumps over 100. While in Nigeria, it has only seen only 3 confirmed coronavirus cases so far. VOA is experiencing some technical difficulties, so we are offering this program recorded earlier. We aim to return to our special, normal programming within a few days. And in the meantime, thanks for choosing The Voice of America. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Malawi was thrown into further political turmoil this week when President Peter Mutharika rejected electoral reforms that would have paved the way for new elections. The Constitutional Court ordered a rerun of last year's vote, and the new polls were scheduled for May 19th. Mutharika, however, said the bills passed by Parliament last month are unconstitutional. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Parliament passed 4 electoral reform bills after the Constitutional Court, citing massive irregularities, nullified last May's elections and ordered fresh elections within 150 days. The 4 bills set a date for fresh presidential elections and a provision for holding a runoff if no candidate gets more than half of the valid votes. Presidential spokesperson Ngeme Galilani told a news conference Tuesday that Mutharika rejected the bills because they conflict with Malawi's constitution.
Following sections 67 and 80 of the constitution, it is not competent for the legislature to enact a statutory provision governing the timetable for a general election or a fresh election or a runoff election as it did under clause 3 of the bill. They can only do that in the constitution.
Kalilani said the president also rejected the bills because they empower parliament to appoint the chief elections officer, a power the spokesman said lies solely with the members of the Malawi Electoral Commission. Analysts say that while Mutharika has a right to reject any bills presented to him, his refusal to sign the electoral reform measures signifies an attempt to cling to power. Mustafa Hussein is a political science lecturer at the University of Malawi.
Not surprising, because we all know that the president is fighting against the elections and he thinks he deserves to be a president. That's why we've seen moves like appealing the court ruling by the Constitutional Court, unwillingness to fire the chairperson of MEC amidst calls by human rights activists.
Rights groups and opposition party supporters have held many protests demanding the resignation of MEC commissioners and its chairperson Jane Ansah for mismanaging last May's polls. The commissioners have stayed in office and are expected to complete three-year terms that end in June. Another analyst, Vincent Kondowe, says the rejection of the bills will heighten political tension in Malawi.
What message is he sending? The people now will say, okay, fine. If you cannot respect the rule of law, let's also not respect the rule of law. This is going to lead to some kind of tension within the next coming weeks or so.
The president's rejection of the measures means they go back to parliament for further debate. The bills will then return to the president for his signature within another 21 days. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
More than 2,000 nomads in Ethiopia's Somali region have died since 2014 after falling ill from a mysterious disease that caused bleeding from their mouths and noses. Others reported symptoms include swollen limbs and green or yellow eyes. The affected people roam with their cattle around the Ogaden Basin region, which is being explored by companies looking for oil and natural gas. Reports of the mysterious illness and deaths have drawn Western reports and researchers from rights groups to investigate. Residents of Kalubi, Ethiopia, have accused a Chinese project that includes construction of a pipeline from Ogaden to Djibouti of destroying the environment where their animals are grazing. Chinese firm PolyGCL has been prospecting for natural oil and gas in Ogaden since 2014. It is expected to start commercial gas production soon. The Ethiopian government has signed a deal with the Chinese company that gives it 50% of any income from oil or gas exploration. The pipeline will enable Ethiopia to export natural gas. Local residents say they have not been consulted. The government in Addis Ababa has denied allegations that the project is causing a health and environmental crisis in the region. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has promoted oil and gas industry as essential for Ethiopia's economic growth. Angola has agreed to receive 75,000 cattle from Chad as payment of a $100 million debt from the cash-poor North Central African country. The cattle will be delivered over the next 10 years as a repayment for the 2017 debt. Local news report said the first installment of 1,000 cows has already arrived in Angola's capital, Luanda, and has been delivered to the Ministry of Agriculture. Another shipment of 3,500 heads of cattle is expected later this month. Reports say the agreement works for both sides because Chad is short of money and Angola needs cattle. Angola is a southern African country rich in oil but still struggling to recover from the ravages of the protracted civil war following 1975's independence from Portugal. Parts of Angola are prone to droughts that kill its cattle. Chad is a landlocked North Central African country with an abundance of livestock. While oil is its top exports, the former French colony also exports cattle. A report says attacks on journalists in Somalia, always a major problem, are on the rise again. The report from Amnesty International said the attacks, along with harassment and intimidation, are entrenching Somalia as one of the most dangerous places in the world to be a journalist, Mohammed Yusuf reports.
The Amnesty International report, entitled "We Live in Perpetual Fear," details harassment, intimidation and killings of journalists by militant group Al-Shabaab, police and various government officials. The threats on Somali journalists have created a climate of fear, says Deprois Moshena, the head of Amnesty International in East and Southern Africa.
This fear is experienced through a range of violations that are physical in nature, which include physical attacks, arbitrary arrests of journalists, killings by both the armed group Al-Shabaab and the government forces, in particular in the one case. And then the disturbing accompanying point and observation we make is that for all these violations, there is actually no concluded investigations that have been done in order for us to say impunity is now being addressed.
The rights group says 8 journalists have been killed since the administration led by President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo came to power 3 years ago. 5 journalists were killed by Al-Shabaab attacks, 2 by unknown gunmen, and 1 was murdered by a police officer. Abdullahi Hassan, an Amnesty International Somali researcher, told reporters in Nairobi that journalists were attacked for doing their work.
Most of the times when these physical attacks happened, they happened in a context where journalists were trying to cover what they call sensitive stories. These sensitive stories include reporting on Al-Shabaab attacks, reporting on corruption, reporting on human rights violations, and reporting on issues that are perceived to be critical of the government.
Another 8 Somali journalists have fled the country for fear of their lives. 30-year-old Nur Ismail Sheikh is one of them. His troubles began when he interviewed some opposition groups critical of the Somali government. The reporting led to his arrest. I was detained for 12 days in Mogadishu. I was detained in the Criminal Investigation Police for a few days and later transferred to the central prison without charge, he says. I was later released. After the release, I started receiving threats from different groups. The threats to my life have forced me to flee the country and come to Kenya. Somalia's Ministry of Information said in a statement Thursday that it disagrees with the rights group's findings. The statement said the report is politically motivated and is aimed at tainting the image of the Somali government, which it said has taken measures to protect journalists and media houses. Somalia is preparing for local and presidential elections next year. The rights organization says the heated political climate may generate more violence against journalists. It is calling on the Somali government to create an environment for journalists and media organizations to operate to inform and help Somalis to make decisions about their next government. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this special VOA Africa program. I'm your host, Yehiyus Wuhib, in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in to this recorded program while VOA resolves its technical issues. Thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey,
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.